If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. Today, I have a guest on who I met several months ago. It happened by chance. We had some mutual friends, and he had his own podcast at the time, and he invited me to come on his show. I agreed, and it was a great show, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I reached out to him recently and said, you know, I started my own podcast. I'd love to have you on my show. And he went like, sure. So I'm really, really excited. My guest today is Rabbi Jacob Rupp. Now, Jacob is a highly regarded executive mindset coach and rabbi who has spent the last 15 plus years combining ancient and mystical wisdom with modern psychology and coaching practices to help leaders achieve clarity and direction in decision making and transformational growth in self-perception and marital happiness. And who doesn't need marital happiness? The implementation of Jacob and his client's strategy creates dramatic increases in internal peace, family cohesiveness, and leadership integrity. Jacob and his wife, Julie, also train both for-profit and nonprofit professionals looking to leverage their current expertise to create more impact and income by building profitable one-on-one coaching practices. The Rupps live in Phoenix with their four children. Please help me welcome Jacob Rupp. Jacob, how are you?
I am the best. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on my show. I firmly believe that I'm returning a favor to you. You had me on your show. I figured, let me return the favor, have you on my show. I still remember, you know, I remember that interview. I was really, really honored to be on that show, by the way. And I get to return the favor.
Any opportunity to spend time with you is a pleasure and something I look forward to. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much. By the way, yeah, I did not pay him to say that.
I was expecting you to, so we'll have to discuss that later.
Oh, there you go. I knew it wasn't going to be a freebie. Anyway, now, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices telling us what's the right thing to do in life, and it represents the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. And let's be real, everybody has a brick thrown at them at some point in time in their life or another. Now, knowing you and reading your bio, it's evident that you're a highly successful coach. So my first question is, at what point in your life did you decide that this was going to be your career? And the fact that you are a rabbi, did that have anything to do with that decision?
So, candidly speaking, I don't feel like I found where I'm going in my career because it is something that is completely evolving. And one of the big things that I think we struggle with a lot across the board in the coaching industry, in the rabbinic industry, in the world at large is how do we define ourselves? And one of the things I'm consistently pushing people to do is like, forget the definition and just go out there and do it. So my business itself has taken on many iterations. My career has taken on many iterations, but the core theme, which is essentially trying to be a mirror for people to find themselves and to sort of get out of their own way, that's something I expect to do for the rest of my life, God willing, and something I've been very passionate about from a very young age. How I get paid doing that, I'm still, you know, it's an ongoing experience and journey.
Wow. Well, you know what they say, do something that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. But nobody ever talks about the money aspect of that. Let me ask you this. Does being a rabbi help you with your business?
So the very interesting thing was, I think in a lot of ways, my business really took off when I was capable of taking off the rabbi hat. What that means is specifically that rabbi means so much for and to so many people. And it also means a lot to ourselves. One of the things that the reason why I became a rabbi in the beginning was I was really passionate about helping people connect to their Jewish heritage. And I grew up as a Reform Jew in Northern California. And so rabbi meant, you know, you could listen to this person when it came to Judaism. When I went to Israel later after college, I met all kinds of like masters of Judaism that didn't even have a rabbinic certification. But what I realized is a lot of times is you have to speak the language of the people that you want to affect. So I knew that by becoming a rabbi, I could have a bigger impact with my constituents. So I got certified, so to speak. I got the rabbinic degree. But then what I started to realize for myself is I didn't want to be a paid rabbi anymore because I wanted to go. I felt that coach offered me more flexibility and obviously an easier way to monetize, et cetera. So yes, being a rabbi very much did and does help me. I think that I still, to a very large extent, carry the rigor that one needs when it comes to, you know, being a rabbi means something. You don't want to, like, God forbid, you know, mess it up for everybody. So I really kind of carry that with me in my current iteration as well. And also the idea of helping people and being focused on the eternal realities of life to help us through the ups and downs, the whispers and the bricks.
Mm-hmm. So let me see if I got this. Let me see if I got this straight. Basically, you became a rabbi because you had a certain goal or a certain vision in mind. After you acquired the rabbinic certification, I guess you realize that there are other ways that you can help people without being a rabbi. In other words, you didn't want to be a practicing rabbi, so to speak, or a pulpit rabbi. But certainly,
I never wanted to be a pulpit rabbi. I always wanted to reach the Jews that weren't in the synagogue. So having a pulpit would be highly detrimental to that component. Yes. So there's like a 10-year period, though, where I worked as a 15-year period where I worked as a rabbi, not with a pulpit, but with different populations. I spent, you know, 10 years at UCLA. I worked as a high school rabbi. I worked with NCSY in San Diego. I worked with Aisha Torah in Minneapolis. So I definitely did the rabbi thing for a lot of times without the pulpit.
Okay, great. So then I imagine that having the knowledge, not necessarily the title, so to speak, but the knowledge that you've acquired when becoming a rabbi, that was, I can't imagine that it hasn't been. It must be a very, very helpful tool for you because it's just another way of looking at things, right? And that the ordinary layman may not have ever thought of. All right. But you having that background gives you that opportunity of saying, hey, but, you know, but here's what I learned, and then trying to help people. Am I kind of on the right track?
100%. 100%.
Great. Great. All right. Let me ask you this. All right. Throughout your lifetime, as we said, you know, whispers and bricks. I think my question is, what were some of the struggles or failures, some of the bricks that you got hit with in your life, whether it was in your professional life or your personal life? What were some of those bricks like that you got hit with?
I mean, the kind of core story that I've, in the process, as now a 38-year-old man with four of my own children, was that I really didn't have a father figure that was sort of what I wanted to emulate in a lot of ways. I grew up it was difficult. I don't know if my father is alive or dead, and I haven't spoken to him since I was in high school. Growing up as an alcoholic, he was an alcoholic and certainly emotionally very abusive, and sort of working through and navigating also what. There's a whole study on how the other parent, the mothers in this case, how they sort of, I was the oldest son. So, like, you know, just navigating that world of really trying to be there and like be an advocate for my mom when that was not really my role. And also trying to like look for that father figure and not finding him and wanting him to be there and having to redefine that whole mess. So that was sort of my and the more, again, a lot of the other struggles in my life, a lot of it goes back to that and having to be someone in order to be worthy of love and never being what the other person was able to see and being able to just be loved for who I was and not what I did. There's all kinds of those core essential character themes that were still are very much impactful in my life and how I see things.
I had no idea.
Always nice to throw a curveball out there.
Yeah. I had no idea. Wow. So, oh man. So now this takes us into a whole new direction. At what point, you said you haven't seen your father since high school. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So what, how many siblings are you?
I have one sister who's 3 years younger than me.
Yeah. One sister, 3 years younger. And your mom is still alive.
Yep. Very much.
And she's with you and you have, now was she, I can't imagine she wasn't. I mean, she must have been very, very important in your life.
Extremely.
Would you look at her and say that she probably had more of an impact on your life than any other person? In other words, was she your go-to person, I would assume?
So the interesting thing was we were very, very close. And at a certain point, I watched as my dad left the picture and I was sort of more free to play with my own masculinity and what that meant. And they were so different. And it was like, we were, you know, it was always like trying to pay attention to see who I could be in order to be pleasing for the other person, which again is a core theme that goes throughout our lives. You know, my mom was like very into me embracing. I joke around the fact that I'm from the Bay Area. I grew up, she's like a super like liberal, like, you know, all that. And my dad was like a Rush Limbaugh conservative in the 80s. And so like, I have like a very dualistic component when it comes to everything. And so, yeah, like really trying to be what would make my mom proud. But then as I became Orthodox, so that was like a whole thing and, you know, worked through that and then creating boundaries around my wife and my mother so that wasn't encroached upon. So very much she's been unbelievably important. But then one of the things I've worked very hard on is really asserting myself to kind of be my own person and articulating what I need and being okay with that.
Wow. So then let me ask you this. Obviously you've gone through many iterations from not being an observant Jew to, you know, becoming an observant Jew to becoming a rabbi to, I mean, taking it to the nth degree. And then using that knowledge to help other people. I'm assuming that interest in helping people probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, but probably came from the fact that you did grow up with an alcoholic parent and, you know, you didn't want to, and correct me if I'm wrong. I'm assuming you didn't want anybody else to have to go through the things that you were going through. And if they were going through it, all right, you wanted to be there to help them. Am I correct?
Yeah, totally. But also there's that element of I know this sounds unusual, but as I developed my own, being married for, you know, going on a better part of 2 decades now, you know, the fact that like, it was always very easy to demonize one of my parents, especially as I'm trying to protect my mom. And I, you know, I remember like sleeping with weapons by my bed so that, you know, my dad would come up for my mom at night, like all kinds of like crazy stuff that, you know, was in retroactively looking back at that, you know, like looking back at that, you're like, wow, that was really traumatic for like a 7-year-old kid, you know, cause like now my son's like 9 and like, I look at what a normal 9-year-old looks like. And I'm like, he needs my dad. He doesn't need to be, he needs his father like me,
right?
As opposed to figuring out like, how do I defend yourself against this much larger, scarier person that's in your life? So on that, that was one half, but on the other hand, understanding that like having a level of compassion for people that struggle with anger, people that struggle with alcoholism, people, again, obviously like my dad wasn't happy in his marriage. He wasn't happy with my mom. He wasn't happy where he was in his life. And ultimately realizing that I also have that within me and having a level of compassion and working with guys like that also. So it's like, it's not just, I'm an advocate for the quote victim. I think in a lot of these dynamics, there's really two victims. And I know that's probably very controversial to say, but like, how do we, no one wants to be the addict or the abuser, just like no one wants to be the enabler or the abused. And how do we create enough compassion and clarity for everybody as people to get people out of these horrible cycles that nobody wants to be in?
Wow. So let me ask you this. Did you ever get to a point in your life that you were so low that you just went like, you know what? I quit. I'm giving up on my dreams. I can't deal with this. You know, I'm going to cuddle up into a ball. I'm going to stay in my bed for the rest of my life. You know, And if you did reach that point, I can't imagine that. I mean, most people do, but when you got to that level, how did you come out of it? All right. How did you manage to actually, you know, become a responsible human being in this world, you know, raising a family, you know, having a wife and kids and what, you know, how did you do it?
In my life or this week? No, this week. So besides a lot of hard music and to be completely candid, I see all of these as iterations and evolutions. And my most recent iteration and evolution has been really going on a extremely rigorous campaign to love myself and to forgive myself and to go to a place where I wanted to drop all the judgment. And I know that is extremely controversial coming from a white male who's an Orthodox rabbi in terms of saying that there's, you know, you really have to get clear on what you want and to drop all of the judgments and all of the nonsense and everything like that and just kind of be your own person. I found that was the most effective thing. How do you get up after one of these awful tragedies, I think is I would always say you want to get super clear on where you want to go. And again, that comes back to being able to release the expectations that are being put upon you and being really able to own yourself. What do I want? Like, actually, then you want to look at like, what do I have that can help me? So, you know, taking making a personal asset list, the things that like, okay, you know, again, like it's even in our business right now, we're at this like very exciting, growth trajectory. And what that results to in most cases is just sitting around scared and feeling like I'm not good enough, but then realizing like, no, this is amazing. Like every single thing I was super clear on that I wanted, I've gotten that over and over and over again in my life. I was like 100 pounds fatter than I am now. And like, I couldn't even talk to a girl in terms of like, I had all kinds of friends, but again, I didn't grow up religious. So like, you know, wanting to have a woman that would validate me and define me beautiful and like attractive and acceptable and desirable was something I struggled with for 20 years. And like, now I've been married for almost 20 years. And like, you know, so working through that thing, and then I wanted to have kids. I have kids. Being religious, I am religious. Having more money now, I make more money in a month than I was making during years of my life, going from terribly in debt to, thank God, being able to drive what I want and live where I want to live and having that freedom. So I've gotten everything I've wanted. So it's the kind of thing where now, as I go through this candid entrepreneurial panic that I think that most people who are honest with themselves go through, and it's like, oh my God, I don't want to go back there. Oh my God, what happens again? And I'm not good enough. And I'm competing with the big boys and girls now and all this stuff. It's like just realizing all I have to do is be clear on what I want, really work on that visualization and figure out what are the assets I have that I can help move the ladder. And then how can I network with my support system to enable that to happen in the highest and best good for other people.
Wow. So well said. I mean, you've, in my opinion, you've hit the nail on the head. A lot of the things that you said are things that I preach as well. So it's,
that's where I got it from.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you're head and shoulders above a lot of people. That's what I'm going to tell you.
I'll tell you like this though, candidly speaking, I launched two podcasts where I literally sit around and talk to people like yourself who are either gone through things that I can never imagine going through, just like, you know, in terms of your story, but also have done all the things that I want to do. And I really try to, that's the point, is it's like, none of this stuff is rocket science. I just want to figure out how to do it.
Right. Right. Wow. That's amazing. You know, these are things that I didn't know, the whole weight thing, the whole, alcoholic parent. I had no idea. I'm so happy that you shared that. Because, you know, my audience, there are many in my audience who are going through exactly what you went through. And, you know, many of them are like, you know, cuddling up into that little ball and going, you know, I can't move on. And, you know, to hear what you did and how you came out of it, and, you know, how you became literally a new person. And, you know, it's just wonderful. And I have to thank you so much for sharing your experiences. Now, let me ask you something. Is there anything that you'd like to, any words of wisdom that you would share with my audience? I think we've gotten a lot already, but is there any one last point that you maybe want to leave for my audience?
I think becoming a student of people is the most important thing in the world, in terms of on one side to see what people have gone through that allows them to come, you know, like that allows them to, like, just think about things that people have gone through and start to study that and realize like what history, what people have gone through in history, what people have had to gone through in their personal life. So like, you'll always find people that will like, again, that the Talmud says that, that, you know, they'll like make you like who have it rougher than you and they were able to persevere. So, you know, whenever you're feeling in your pain, study people that have been in similar situations. Alternatively, study the people that are doing what you want. Human progress, human achievement is not this unknown thing, like everyone's kind of done it already. And it's, you know, there are common themes like to study that. And then also I think the experience, the most valuable thing is just to relax. I mean, this is, I think, kind of what I think that, you know, as Jews we're very much into, but like really relax into the process and realize like something much bigger than you is going to carry you through this. So the suffering that you're experiencing is just the story that's in your own head and that there is a really a bigger perspective. And if we can get if we can make the decision, if we have the willingness to not suffer, so much opens up for us. But that's really, really hard because we are so addicted to our own suffering. And we will find different things to suffer about when one thing gets resolved. So like when I was suffering with money, so like that was great. But then the money thing got turned around and now I started suffering with like right now, like I'm working on like my body image and like I like my business is doing stuff I never thought it could do. My finances are in a place I never thought they were. But like now I'm like really struggling with eating. And I realizing like, why am I struggling with this? It's like, oh, because I'm really addicted to suffering. So I just have to let go of the whole thing. I don't want to suffer. That's the idea.
Wow. That's great. Jacob, if people want to get in touch with you, what would be the best way for them to do that? You have a website, you have an email. What was the,
thank God, it's been quite a while on that. So on any social platform you want, except TikTok, just look up Jacob Rupp, Rabbi Jacob Rupp, YouTube, Facebook, you know, Instagram, where we are there and happening. I thank God have two podcasts, the Lift Your Legacy podcast and the Jewish Executive Project podcast available on all of your different platforms. And if you want to reach out to me, jacob@therupgroup.co, not COM, but CO, the Rupp, Jacob at the Rupp Group .co. Thank
Jacob,
you
so much. Jacob at the Rupp, RUPP.
RUPP, two P's, okay. Like all twice.
Jacob at the Rupp Group .co.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Jacob, thanks so much for sharing your story with my audience. It's been wonderful. Good luck going forward. I wish you all the best. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shomer. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.